You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I'm part of a sisterhood like no other. A piece of a puzzle I can barely comprehend. My life is someone else's experiment. My name is Alison Hendricks. It's Cassima Niehaus.
It's Rachel Duncan.
Alex Callahan.
Heather French.
Sarah Manning. And I'm one of a kind.
You don't know me. I'm not just one of your many toys.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we talk Season 3 Orphan Black. My name is Heather. If you listen to any of our other podcasts, like the iZombie one that just came out, you know that I was in fear of possibly podcasting solo next week. I have a feeling that this week and the following weeks on Orphan Black, I don't have to worry about being solo because I have my podcasting partner in crime who was probably squeeing over another solo. Hi, Alex.
Hi, everybody.
The little teaser. If you haven't guessed yet, a certain guest star, a solo guest star that is going to help make sure that I am not alone on these podcasts.
You are full of puns. I approve.
Hey, that's her name. Sticking to it. We're here to talk about Orphan Black Season 3, Episode 5, Scarred by Many Past Frustrations. Here is a frustration less kind of thing for you, Alex. This episode title and next week's episode title both come from the same quote from the Eisenhower speech, so you only have to hear this once.
Okay.
There was much rejoicing. So, Scarred by Many Past Frustrations is this week's episode title. The weakest must come to the conference table with the same confidence as do we. Protected as we are by our moral, economic, and military strength, that table, though scarred by many past frustrations, cannot be abandoned for the certain agony of the battlefield. Which, that's next week's episode title, just so you know. We are calling this one The One Without a Sandwich.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because there was no sandwich. Helena did not have the sandwich with her. And I don't know if I'm glad or not, but we'll talk about that when we get to Sarah and Helena. So let's get right into it first with our bullet points.
One day, I'll kill you all.
Helena and her sestra are reunited at the Castor camp. When Sarah is captured, as Sarah suffers testing, Paul appears to chide her, but his allegiances are beginning to strain. While the Lita family worries about Sarah's absence, Gracie breaks Amish under the care of Mrs. S and an unwilling Felix, and Cassima falls hard for an internet date, Shay. The things that you miss, listeners, when we do edits, because we have now edited out quite a bit of this episode, but we are here for you because we want to talk about this episode.
Holy doodle, here we go.
Three, two, one.
That we're pretty safe in saying that this is in two parts. We have the Helena and Sarah stuff and all the Castor camp things there. So we'll talk about that second. Everybody else kind of falls into this mishmash together where everybody interweaves together.
Yeah.
We pretty much start with Mrs. S and Fee, who, as we said in the bullet points, everybody seems to be concerned about Sarah. Not too concerned, I noticed, because they all just mention it enough. Haven't heard from her. Yeah, she'll call. But yeah, I'm worried too. Need to pick up the worry a little bit there.
The only person who is actually worried, and you can tell that they will do something about it, is Art.
Oh, yes, I love art. But let's get to Art in a second, because I first want to get... We'll get past the initial Fee and Mrs. S. Mrs. S seems now to be a little bit more on the mend, both physically and mentally and emotionally, and seems to be back on track, not so scared about everything and what happened. I like seeing that, and I like seeing Fee nurture her along and be there for her. Fee is doing his what Fee does best, which is nurturing everybody else. And they're really sweet together. later on when he overhears her talking with Gracie about her first husband and what happened to him. I like seeing that side of Fee when he's just like, oh, why didn't you tell us? And that's so sweet. And he's just being so caring.
For the majority of the episode, I gotta tell you, I was touched by his approach, but I was mostly distracted because his eyelashes were distracting. And I spent half of the episode wondering whether or not it was makeup, mascara, or if Jordan's eyelashes are actually that nice.
Here's something I've come to learn about men, is they generally have the most beautiful natural eyelashes, and I hate them for that.
Yes.
Because we have to layer on all sorts of goop to get them to look even remotely that good.
And that's just not fair.
And Jordan, he's just pretty. He's very, you notice how Fee is very pretty lately. Like, I mean, his skin, his hair looks like you just want to run your fingers through it, but you don't want to because then it would mess it up. And it's just so pretty. He's just so everything is pretty and perfect. He's not super stylized. He's just very pretty. And I mean that in a totally wonderful way because he's fabulous. But he's just very pretty.
No, it's just so, so pretty. And it's just not fair. And I have to remind myself that we like Fee because otherwise I would hate. Seriously, those eyelashes, they should be a crime, basically. It's just too perfect.
It's too pretty. And Maria Doyle Kennedy looked very nice, I thought, in this episode, too. Very soft and natural. And
if it wasn't for the gash over her eye, I wouldn't be able to tell that anything happened to her. Because, she was looking nice and rested. So clearly, Fee is taking good care of her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's a plus in his column. And, she looked... I almost forgot that we weren't supposed to like her because she sold Helena. But I liked her this episode.
That's something, though, that I think Fee does, is he brings out the best in people. And I think he just does it to make his life easier. He just doesn't want to be... Because she really does seem much different than the Mrs. S. from the past, and I'm liking her, and I attribute that to Fee. I really do.
Hey, you never told us John Sidler was killed.
You were eavesdropping.
Yeah, wasn't about to leave you alone with Rosemary's baby, was I? Come on, S.
He was a beautiful rebel, also fairly beautiful drunk. Had a habit of rubbing people the wrong way. There was a drunken fight, and he ended up with a pair of garden shears stuck in his throat.
Why didn't you tell us?
It took me a long time to let go. I mean,
another thing I attribute to Fee. Not that I don't love, and we'll talk more about Mrs. S. and Fee as we go along, but this is the one that I know Alex really wants to get to. And I'll get out my part first and then let her just have a squee fest because I probably won't get in a word edgewise after that. But the other thing Fee does and how he brings out the good in people is we have him talking to Cosima on the phone.
Hello, Sapphire.
You already tell this is going to be a waste of time.
Coase, you're scouting. Nothing more. You're just there for 20 minutes to determine some physical chemistry.
Oh, God. Your legs.
Just be yourself. And don't bail, okay?
Okay.
Ciao, darling.
Bye. Just a little chiding. But he's doing it to just say, you know, be yourself. And you won't fail if you do that. He's just so encouraging, and he's really helping Cosima come into her own. And that's when we have Ksenia Solo walk in as Shay, her Sapphire date. I have to say, and like I said, I'm going to get this out because then I'm handing the baton totally over to you, Alex. When she walked in, I'm so used to her from Lost Girl having the long, dark hair.
Yes.
That seeing her with blonde hair throws me off. And if it actually wasn't for another show she's on right now, which Alex is very upset that I told her that she's on this because now she's going to have to start watching it. She is on the second season of Turn, Washington Spies, and she plays Peggy Shippen. Spoiler alert for those of you who don't want to be spoiled, you know, who are worried about 200-year-old spoilers. Peggy Shippen eventually marries Benedict Arnold, the biggest traitor in American history. Yes, we still have a grudge against him. So if it wasn't for her playing that and me seeing her in, I mean, she's wearing like the hair is up and the Marie Antoinette and the, you know, the colonial gowns and things like that. I don't know if I would have recognized Ksenia walking in. She's beautiful, but so different from her lost girl.
Yeah.
That it threw me off. She really fit in well with Cosima. Her and Tatiana and Ksenia do have this ease about them, which I really liked. And I see her and Cosima really matching up quite nicely, which has me worried because somebody is taking a picture.
You're either in balance or not, and if not, I'd try to help you get there. Plus, I don't totally trust
Shay that she is there just because of this Sapphire app and Cosima being so cute and hot and smart and wonderful. I have a feeling Ksenia is there for a reason. So that has me sad because I really like these two together. Okay, Alex, take it.
Oh, okay. First of all, I have no idea what you were, you know, implying. I will be fair and mature and will not talk about Shay like she's suddenly the main character of the entire season. Though if she gets promoted to series regular, I will not complain. But I knew that she got cast in Orphan Black very early on. Very early on, and it actually spoiled a little of Lost Girl for me, because if she got cast in something else that shoots at approximately the same time as Lost Girl, I knew that wasn't good.
Both in Canada, though. So.
Yeah, so that was helpful. But then again, I remembered when Coven Smith was both on Stargate Atlantis and the 4400s, and he was doing two shows at the same time, and there was never enough of his characters on either show, because he was doing both. But I knew that she was coming, and I was excited, and they said nothing about her role, other than, you know, her occupation that we learned in this episode, and that she would have scenes with Cosima. But back then, nobody thought that she would be actually a love interest, because, you know, Cosima and Delphine were tight, were awesome together, and we did not see their breakup coming. But once that Delphine and Cosima broke up, I knew that Ksenia would be a love interest of a sort, and that got me even more excited. And seeing how much chemistry she has with Tatiana.
Yeah, talk about hard science, hey.
that was nice. But also, I have to agree with you, she looked so different than Kenzie on Lost Girl. And not only the hair, but her behavior, the way she talked, you know, the way she carried herself. I was blown away, because I knew Ksenia was an incredibly good actress. That's not hard to see when you watch her for more than 5 minutes. But to see this total change from what I was used to for the past 4.5 years, wow. Just wow. And I'm torn on this one, because I don't want her to be the bad guy, but at the same time, I know how deliciously evil she could be, and how awesome she would portray that, you know. On Orphan Black, nobody's completely evil. They all have their own motives. Well, Dr. Cody is completely evil, and we don't like her, but...
And Rudy.
Rudy's crazy, so that's a different kind of evil. And I know that Ksenia would be able to pull it off, but I want her now that I've seen her with Cosima, I want more, and I want her to become part of Clone Club, because then I would be able to imagine Kenzie and Felix having all sorts of wacky adventures.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
That is pure comedy gold. That is awesome and amazing, and I wish it could happen. So I want Shay to last, basically. If we learn that she's evil, well, fine. I will take it, and I will love it, because it's Xenia. But I want her to be good, because she was good with Cosima, and I feel like she could have the potential to help Cosima get over Delphine.
I like seeing how they interacted, not just at the bar, which I thought was nice, and also a little props to our bartender, because I thought she was fun there, too, with Cosima while she was waiting. It's like, yeah. Yeah, don't go into the whole ex stuff, because, yeah, you reek of
ex.
Of just recently broke up. Yeah. When they got back to Cosima's place, in quotes, because this is where she's staying now, and she knows that Fee's gone, and Fee would be very happy. He'd be like, you go, girl. You know, he'd be very happy for her. It was really nice and easy. You could see Cosima misses that part of herself that she hasn't had. Not just because Delphine and her have broken up, but because she's been sick and she'd been so focused on that. And here she has this moment to get back in touch with that sensual part of herself and how much she wants to have a connection. You know, I mean, they even in the previous scene when Shay is like, okay, this is how it goes. And she talks about, okay, here's my ex and here's my story. And then Cosima spills everything about Delphine, you know, talking about what it is and like still finding her hairs, like how beautiful her hair was and still finding her hairs on all of her clothes, which I thought that was kind of a really great way to show how close they were and how into Cosima's life they were.
Loving is short, forgetting is long.
That's beautiful.
It's Pablo Neruda. My mom made me read everything. You okay? Do you want me to go?
No.
You want me to stay?
Her name is Delphine. She and I work together. She's French. Mostly just really great hair. Which is now in. Find it in all my clothes. I don't know what I'm doing, but. You're
and
way more
still
than
having
I expected.
Shay being very open and careful with Cosima makes me very hopeful that it could be something good. But knowing how the show works and knowing that somebody was taking pictures of them at the bar and some of the few things from the preview next week, because we do have, yay, Delphine looks like it's coming back next week. I'm dubious that she's not, that she's just there because they found each other on an app. That doesn't mean she's evil. I mean, Donnie was on the bad side, but he wasn't evil. And we love Donnie now. You know, and you have characters like that. And we started out not liking Art at all. And now we're like, oh, Art. So I can see her still being one of those. We even have, you know, Dylan Bruce, which I see that happening too, where we're like, I don't like Paul. Oh, Paul. So I could see her being one of those kind of characters. But what she's bringing into the story, I think, is very dubious and potentially scary. But the good thing is it gets Cosima back in the mix, because Cosima has been out of it for quite a while.
Hey, it's always good thing that she's getting a storyline that's not just her sickness or doing science for her sisters. Just something, you know, that it's her own. Which will probably, you know, like you said, tie into Clone Club at some point in the future. But so far, so good. So far, so good. And I am thrilled with Xenia's first appearance on the show. It's basically, right now, Shay joined Jesse in my shiny, heavy place.
Well, let's hope she's on for more than the one episode that Jesse is on for right
Don't
now.
Don't remind me.
Right now.
Don't remind
or
me about
even
it.
Like, or even like James Frayne. I love James Frayne as Ferdinand.
Mm.
Fernando, as I like to think of him. But he had this one episode. I was even listening to ABBA this afternoon, and I had to listen to that song twice, and I was thinking about it. I loved his character. One episode so far. Not saying he can't come back, but one episode. And I want to see Ksenia stay on for a while longer. Also, to be selfish, I like the idea of having more great female characters on there that are not being played by Tatiana.
By Tatiana. Yeah.
I love you, Tatiana. We adore you. But it's nice seeing that there's other women in the world besides Leda clones.
Definitely. Definitely.
And one of the women that I am really surprised that I'm actually kind of interested in her story is probably the last part of this and the rest group. That's little Miss Gracie.
Yeah.
I was very shocked. Okay, first off, I love that this is a good way to get Art again actively in here. Sarah had told her, if you're in trouble, go to this guy. And it makes sense. He's a cop. But it's also very cute because did you notice how he had no idea what to do with Gracie, just like he had no idea what to do with Helena. When he's just...
Yeah.
Poor Art. Poor Art. I had to laugh because he's like, oh, I don't know what to do. It's like babysitting. He's never let Art babysit. Oh, and by the way, I did also notice that in the opening credits, whenever Art is on, Kevin Hanchard gets his own title card, which means Ari and Kristen have to share. Because Donnie and the Caster clones shared this week. And I even went back and looked. The previous week when they had their own cards, Kevin's name wasn't in there. So if Art's in the episode, then Ari and Kristen have to share a card.
Hey, we both love Ari and Kristen, but let's face it. Art was there first.
He was.
So he deserves special treatment.
I'm totally fine with everything with it, that but that is one thing I know, since we did talk about how we were excited that Kristen got his own card. Not so much only if Art's not in the story. We have Art realizing that once the baby is gone, because he knew that she had been pregnant, I lost the baby, okay, well, hospital or woman's shelter isn't the place for you, I know somebody that can help. And that's how we end up with Mrs. S again. It's like Mrs. S's halfway house for misfits.
Yeah.
Anybody that shows up.
For Clone Club rejects.
Exactly. Did you notice that I love how Art even describes them? These are good people.
Mm.
That's not necessarily how I think he would have described them a few seasons ago. And so, again, that for me reinforces that he is definitely part of Clone Club.
Well, yeah. Were you ever doubting that fact? Come on.
No. But it's always nice to hear those extra little things that haven't forgotten, that he is he is now in the core group of Clone Club. He's not just a periphery that knows about it, but he's actually in there. And did you also notice Fee called the Perlethians creepy?
These are good people. Okay?
This is insane. They're creepy crypto-religious fanatic.
Look, she says she's split from them, and I believe her.
Then fine. Why don't you keep her?
But after everything she's been through, she needs a friend, Felix, not a cop.
And she knows her husband's a clone.
Yeah, she seems to. And she's obviously struggling with it.
Yeah, well, she doesn't look ready for cult deprogramming to me.
She looks a damn sight better than you did when I took you in.
I was not yet formed.
You were a budding delinquent at 6. Now go on. Help her get settled and I'll see Arthur out. Go on.
You, baby Jesus, come up the stairs with me.
And I felt such satisfaction because finally, it's like when characters on TV shows say the name of the episode. It's like, he said the thing! He said the thing!
That's what we called them too!
Oh, Fee, you can be on our Clone Club podcast. Because you know who's creepy.
Maybe somebody heard it and passed it along. Fee is fabulous when he has to mix with these different characters. I mean, going back to him and Allison, when they first started mixing, how this isn't even oil and water. This is fire and water and all this, and how they became such good friends. Watching Fee help her, you know, come along, baby Jesus. How he still hasn't lost it, but he goes and finds some of Sarah's clothes. And definitely in the bullet points, we'd said there that she breaks Amish. Yeah, she's definitely breaking Amish. This is the Rumspraga to end all Rumspraga, that she just goes from being a creepy Prolethean, who is pregnant with her father and Helena's baby, to, I want to go out dancing at a club and you don't want to come. I was going to ask you to come, but never mind. Gracie is breaking out of that mold. What would Mark say if he saw her?
What did you expect? Because even without seeing the promo last week, the first thing I expected from Gracie was to act up. Because suddenly she's not bound by those really strict rules and she's been cast out from the sect that she's been living with her whole life. And she has nobody to, you know, tell her this is wrong and everything. So the first thing, she's 18 years old, like she said, you know. The first thing she does is to try all the things she wasn't allowed to try before. It was so predictable.
She gets to finally express the fact, too, that she's had doubts. I think that's probably one of the first times she's vocalized that I've had my doubt. We've seen it. We saw it all last season.
Yeah.
She has her doubts. She's not necessarily the evil, creepy Prolethean. She's stuck in it. This is the first time she's gotten to express it. And I love that that happened with Mrs. S and, and Fee. That they're the ones that she opens to.
Definitely. Well, there was a reason why they saw her mouth shut last season. And
I forgot about that.
Let's not talk about it.
Thanks for reminding me, Alex.
You're welcome. You know my motto that I live by: if I have to suffer, so does everybody else. But I really enjoyed the fact that instead of taking her to a club, like, you know, I will go with you so you have supervision, they decided to party in-house, you know? It was smart, and, well, Gracie got played. I don't think she was aware of the fact that she was being played.
Well, I think that's when Mrs. S kind of went very motherly, too, you know, when she's talking to her. And
look at those crazy kids of mine.
Sarah looks so happy.
Why wouldn't she be?
I was always taught they were less than human. Abomination.
But your father took Helena in.
Because she was fertile. He thought she'd been blessed by God.
Fertile, infertile. They're all just people, love. Even your Mark. All those Castor boys are no friends of ours. I don't presume to know how you feel about losing the child.
Then don't. My father put that baby inside me and my mother let him.
What an awful thing.
Why are you being so nice to me?
I was married young too. Eloped, much to the utter disappointment of my mother. My husband, John, was killed.
Oh my goodness.
We were going to have a family. When my husband passed, I was adrift. Angry, but I couldn't go back home. My Aunt Joan took me in, and she stopped me from self-destructing.
So I'm your penance?
No.
I felt that was a genuine response. Like, Mrs. S is like, that's such a silly thing to say. I mean, like, if Dr. Cody said that, no, you're my guest, I'd be scared.
Yeah. Well, Mrs. S did say to Helena that she was a guest. And everybody bought it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. That was great, seeing Fee and Mrs. S having the little party with Gracie. And like, where are they going? Somewhere where they drink Mai Tais. I'm just like, you are so I love Mai Tais, but that's not what you go out to a club for. That's what you're sitting by the beach, by the pool, having a drink. You know, you don't go clubbing. It's like, oh, you've led such a sheltered little life. It's so cute. But it was great seeing, you know, the new dance party. We had the Clone Club dance party last season.
Yeah, but I gotta tell you, watching Mrs. S dance, you know, shake her hips, was a little weirder than watching Helena dance. And I was a little, freaked out because Mrs. S is like a mother to them, you know? And yeah, no, it plays on the fact that I cannot imagine my mom doing that. Well, I can, but now I have to bleach my brain.
Think about when Mrs. S grew up and where she grew up. I'm surprised that this wasn't all Sex Pistols all the time. You know, this. So totally, I was fine with that. What I like is how she looked at Felix when he started dancing. And he's like, what? This is how it's done. You know, and he's, and the gin and juice. Ugh. Yeah, let's get Gracie really hammered with gin and juice. Her exclamation, I think that it wasn't quite clear audio-wise, but I'm going to have to go and try and clear it up because I love it when she just yells out.
I love my girl!
You're kind of a gal, Gracie. I love you.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Until it wasn't.
Until it wasn't.
Yeah, because...
And how they played that, I thought was really interesting because... The way she's acting, it almost looks like she's having her miscarriage. So you start thinking, did she miscarry before? Or did she, like, lose one baby and there's another baby? You know, so it's like it's really playing very much like her miscarriage was. And it's only because of the intercutting that we have with Art, who just because he's brought Gracie there and dropped her off, and just because he's talked with Mrs. S about how he's worried, but he'll track her down. He'll find Sarah no matter what. Don't worry about it. He's still in the story. Because I told you that woman that Seth and Rudy took the hair from and all this, that there was something going on here.
Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, let's make this quick. I have to put my daughter to bed.
What's with the sunglasses?
I've been sick. The doctors don't know what's wrong. For all I know, those assholes gave it to me.
I need to check your eyes. Can you open them for me?
Her and Gracie both have full-on zombie mode rage eyes.
Yeah.
Did you notice that? Mm-hmm. We're having yet another eye zombie crossover here.
And I have to tell you this, because the first thing I thought when they showed the eyes of the girl and then showed that Gracie had the same eyes and how every Castor clone is taking notes of every intimate encounter they have, right? The first thing I thought is, aside from a neurological flaw, in design flaw, that Castor clones have, apparently they also have a clone-specific STD.
Yeah.
That's not creepy at all.
Which, you know, in a way does kind of make sense, she says with the question mark there, because I think Delphine and Cosima... Well, because, you know, you think about it, it's like the Leda clones are sterile. They're infertile. They can't, except for Sarah, they can't have kids. So, and that's a very woman internal thing. Well, the men would.
I know.
I'm trying to make sure and keep this PG-13. How do I say this? And without, I don't know what age people are that are listening to this. But, you know, yeah, the men. Oh, we'll be editing a whole bunch of this. Well, because the men would have their ejaculate that
I know, but it's so leaves their body. You know, a clone specific STD.
So well, but yes, I wonder because if that's what all these, because it's not just because she's been around, but Gracie has had sex with Mark, Dr. Cody even asked Mark, you know, if they had been intimate. And he's like, yes. And this other woman, I forget her name, that we saw with Rudy and Seth, she was intimate with them. And they have all these notes. And, okay. So is this something that is wrong with their sperm genetically that actually kills the new
host.
The recipient or does something? Yeah. The new host, if you want to say.
Well, there has to be a reason why they are supposed to write down the women's, details, right?
Right.
So
scientific,
and this means, well, this makes me think that it's so that somebody in that compound, in the army, in the HQ, whatever, is actually tracking what's happening to those women.
Mm-hmm.
And if they report to a doctor with symptoms or not, then it's, expected. And if they don't, then suddenly they're worth the attention because something's different and the army probably wants samples. And that's another level of creepy.
That's why they're having to keep this journal. And at first, when, jumping ahead a little bit, when Dr. Cody gives the journal to when she finds out that he has had sex with Gracie, it's like, well, why didn't he already have a journal? Oh, because he was with the creepy Prolethians and he was probably supposed to be chaste, because that would be your cult thing. You know, you don't have sex outside of marriage or anything like that. Now that he's married and he has had sex, okay, time for you to start keeping your diary. Time for you to start letting us know all this stuff so that we have the information.
And you consummated this marriage.
Yeah.
Just remember, it wasn't real. She's not one of us. Your first logbook. Any intimate contacts?
It was a twist I didn't see coming. And it makes those little things. I mean, I knew something was coming from the way they were treating things with that woman who Rudy and Seth raped. It was rape. I knew it was coming, but I didn't expect this. And I love it because it now all makes sense why they were doing that. And it makes me, start thinking about these other things, what's going on and such. It makes me also think about what was that woman, the Lita clone, that a Castor clone, I guess it was Rudy and or Seth, that we saw that at the very first episode that Sarah saw on the videotape when they had the Lita clone who had the short skirt and the jewels and all this and was making out with Seth, Rudy, Castor, whatever. It's like, was there something different when they did it with a Lita clone versus a civilian, a regular, somebody who doesn't have a clone? Did she get those blood, those zombie eyes? Did something happen with her? So it's like, I want to know more now.
Just one second. I know that we will talk about him a little bit later on, but since we're on the subject of them taking down notes on women and men, apparently, they slept with... was it just me, or did it look like when Paul was going through a person's personal effects, when he was going through his notebook? Did it look like to you like Paul was seeing a notebook like that for the first time?
Yeah, it definitely seemed that way to me.
He had this frown on his lovely, pretty face that looked like surprise and confusion as to WTF, what's going on. So that was also an interesting development right there, because I thought
definitely think
Paul
so.
Would be aware of what's going on, of everything, since, major.
Well, I mean, we can, let's go ahead and, I mean, I don't know how much more we have on the and the rest crew, or Professor and Marianne. Let's go ahead and move to Camp Castor and talk about that a little more. I think Paul believed everything he was telling Sarah and was questioning everything he was hearing from Dr. Cody. I think this is something that's been indicative of Paul for the last two seasons.
Yeah.
Is he seems to be a guy that plays along until he starts seeing things that aren't kosher. This isn't jiving. This doesn't make sense with what you're saying needs to happen. The way he talked about how Parsons knew what was happening to him.
The military is just another family, Sarah. Your genetic siblings are dying. Everything we do is for them.
You tell yourself whatever you need to.
Opening up their heads, I think Parsons would disagree.
Second Lieutenant Parsons sacrificed what little life he had left for his brothers.
He begged me to end it.
Oh, you murdered him. And you destroyed months
Which
of data that could help
them. Which is a very military thing to say, to do, to believe. That, you know, you're looking out for your men. These are, because your brothers in arms. And I believe that he feels that the Castor clones are his brothers in arms. And maybe he did totally believe that Parsons knew what he was doing. But now that he's seen exactly what's in those journals that he knew the Castor clones, I'm sure, that were out there were keeping.
Yeah.
Like you said, he didn't know what it was they were keeping. He thought, just tracking my movements. This is how I feel today. This is what I ate. This is how much I exercised. You know, this was not an exercise food journal.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what he thought it was. And as he starts looking at it, it's hair sample after hair sample after hair sample, conquest after conquest after conquest, knowing Rudy and knowing Seth, because he had to have known them enough, knows that this was not a cute little consensual thing, at least not the majority of the time.
Yeah.
I think that was the first time Paul's eyes were opened. And that's where, just like we said in the thing, his allegiances are beginning to strain. Because he has total belief in what he's doing, but he doesn't have total belief in who's actually doing the actions.
In the people that he's doing it with, basically.
Right. Right. Which I'm glad.
Well, yeah, and it's going to put an interesting spin on the future episodes. Because I think once the doubt set in, Paul is not the kind of a guy who will just let it go, to quote Frozen, and now everything's frozen, basically. But he's not the kind of a person. You gotta agree, right? He will keep pursuing that and, you know, probably confront Dr. Cody at some point. That will not end well. By the way, that's my prediction for the future episodes. That confrontation, even though it's coming, it's not going to end well.
Yeah, he's starting to do those questions. I mean, I don't think he needed to go to see Sarah and Helena, even though he was doing the Helena thing to protect Sarah. You know, you have Helena, you don't need Sarah, don't hurt her kind of thing. But he didn't have to go to them and confront them, and which is where I get the kissy face, hello, dirty Paul.
Hello, dirty Paul.
I love that, Helena. I'm like, yes, he's a dirty, dirty boy, isn't he? It gets him questioning the fact that he is so tied to Sarah, because he knows Sarah, even if he doesn't know Sarah. He's known her as Monitor Paul. He's known as Dyad Paul. He's known her now as this kind of Paul. And he keeps being drawn in, which is what gets him questioning. And he says, what are we doing? And Cody comes back with that answer, what we have to. I don't think he wants to toe that line totally anymore. I mean, when we see him go to Parsons and examine what actually happened. To Parsons and, you know, like what they were actually doing. It's one thing, kind of like we were talking about in the iZombie podcast, where, well, it's one thing to go to the grocery store and buy some chicken for dinner. It's totally different when you have to go out to the hen house and pick out this cute little chicken.
That's going to get killed.
And, yeah, and make it dinner.
Yeah.
It's totally different. And it was easy when Parsons is just another one of the men and he knew what was happening and then go to see what what actually happened to him. You know, even as he's trying to defend, yeah, Helena, you killed him. You negated months of research and things that could have helped all these other men. And it goes into that whole, you know, needs of the many outweighing the needs of the one or the few.
Yeah.
You know, which we've already learned from, you know, Star Trek Wrath of Khan and Search from Spock, the needs of the many don't necessarily outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And I think Paul is starting to believe that.
I'm looking forward to him breaking out of this military mindset he got back to. Even though, you know, we approve of Dirty Paul. I don't know, I'm looking forward to him being more on the right side. I don't want to say the good side, but, you know, the right side. The side that we approve of, basically.
I like that. The side that we approve of. Yeah, we want to get back there because we've learned your name and we don't do that for just anybody.
Exactly. So, you know, get back on track.
Quickly, we have somebody else whose name we learned. Mm. We decided to learn because they earned it. And that was Mark. It was interesting seeing Mark with Dr. Cody.
Yeah.
And trying to explain why the caster tattoo. He lied. I love how he's lying and he's covering this. And he's protecting that life that he was trying to build. And so it makes me... The backup that we picked him for last week makes me feel that much more confident in him. Yes, you still deserve that backup. You're not...
Yeah, you're doing what you need to do.
You did not betray us at all. And it makes me hate Dr. Cody even more as she's telling him that it wasn't real. Gracie is not one of us. And how she's trying to manipulate everybody and really... make everything just be the way she wants and not the way the individuals want. I do not like her, and I really didn't like her when Rudy did the little kiss goodbye with her. It's like, that's just even creepier.
Yeah.
There's no more creepy Prolethians. We have creepy caster people.
Yeah. But this episode, more than anything else, kind of proved to me that this whole mother routine that she has going on with the caster clones, it's in no way because she considers them her kids. Mm-mm. She considers her assets, her means to an end.
Yeah.
And
they're her pets.
Yeah, basically. And having them call her mother is just another way for her to control them, to manipulate them. Because no matter how they were brought up, when you think about somebody as your mother, it makes you all the more willing to do something you don't feel like doing because mother says so.
Exactly.
So, I just, you know, at the beginning of the season, I thought at one point that, okay, this might be this creepy relationship, but she might actually care about them. We don't know. We barely know her. But as the show progresses, it becomes more and more obvious that no, she doesn't. Mm-hmm. No, she doesn't. And, yeah, it's like you said, we gave up on creepy Prolethean guy because he got a name and now we actually use that name. And now we have creepy army doctors. Though, no, every army doctor is creepy because that guy, the army doctor, the actual army doctor, no, he's a nice hunk. I approve of him. I don't want him to die. Even though technically he works for the creepy doctor. But he is nice.
Gee, I wonder what you mean by nice. He is under orders, so we'll give him a pass there. He's under orders for all this.
Well, I can imagine what kind of orders I would give him. But that would take us away from PG-13 podcasting and, you know, to podcasting after dark. But you know what I mean. And the listeners know what I mean. Because they are so... would probably give him certain orders.
Changing the track, we did find out one interesting thing, I think, from Cody when she's looking at the baby skeleton. That this skeleton, this little baby, died because it didn't have a synthetic sequence to help it. But this synthetic sequence as Rudy says, yeah. is what actually gives them the defect. So it is this interesting juxtaposition. And I'm like, is anybody recording this? Can you send this to Cosima and Scott so that they can know that this is what's going on? Because I'm like, that's a really interesting piece of information.
But this is something I really enjoy, even though I do not understand science of this show, like, at all. I blank it completely and then replace the science words with blah, 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 blah. Important stuff, blah, blah, blah.
But, and then a miracle happened, yeah.
Yeah, a miracle happens. You know, magic. That's how I see the whole science clone thing. But what I really do enjoy is seeing two separate scientific teams looking for the same thing, because they are basically looking for the same thing, taking mm-hmm. different approaches to finding said same thing, and, you know, rooting for one of them. I'm pretty sure if you take out the people dying and the cloning stuff and all the exciting stuff, this would be what racing to a new discovery looks like.
Yeah.
Two separate teams with similar but not completely exactly the same information, and what they do with it and how they approach it. It's absolutely fascinating.
Well, remember, actually, it's at least three teams, because we'd have the military, we have Dyad, and we have Cosima.
Yeah, but we don't actually see Dyad working.
We will
on
again.
It. We know they I are working on again. It, but we they don't see working. Them, you know, hunched over a laptop or splicing stuff or doing science
yeah.
things.
Like, I think, you know, we will, pictures. But we do have three. We do have three that are racing towards it, and I think yeah. that makes it, because it then becomes really hard to know who are you rooting for to find it, you know? Because, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Let's use that, Dr. Cody, the psycho bitch, not my words, Sarah's words, as they're taking the blood from her. Which I couldn't watch, because I can never watch needles when they're doing
that
kind of stuff.
But they actually, there was so freaky, because usually when they show, on the show, when they do somebody being stuck with a needle, you know, for mm-hmm. various purposes, they don't actually show you the needle piercing the skin. And they did show it on this show, and I was like, ugh. I was not ready for this. I am ready for the brains and for the blood splatter and guts and everything. But seeing actually
a
needle pierce the skin, I was like, oh, there should be a warning on this one.
Enough talking about that. Let's get to the scorpion and Helena and Sarah. This is interesting, I think, in the fact that we have not seen these two together in a really long time. And can I tell you, it really made me miss, like, the road trip and all that other time, the other times, like, the camping and all that, when it was Sarah and Helena.
Mm.
Because Tatiana has such great chemistry with herself. Talking about
this. That's not weird at all.
Yeah. Again, something I never thought I'd really be talking about. You have really great chemistry with yourself. It was nice seeing them back together again. Although it did confirm my fear that Helena really did think that her sestras
yeah,
did abandon her.
That sucked.
And suddenly I didn't like the scorpion anymore, because I had liked the scorpion in previous episodes because I thought it was helping fortify Helena. It was saying that Sarah was lying. Sarah wasn't lying.
Sarah's lying. She's poison. She's gonna melt you like butter.
Shut up about the butter.
No, but what? Hey, after a while, Helena could buy into that. And hey, at some point I actually believed that, okay, she was willing to forgive the perceived slight and, you know, try to get out together. But that didn't work out the way I wanted.
I thought it was interesting with the scorpion, though, how at the beginning, before Sarah is there, or before Helena knows Sarah is there, how she finds that nail
Oh, Helena. Guilty pleasures won't help you escape.
And the actually belittling her for going back into old habits of quote-unquote pleasure as Helena cuts herself with this nail and walks off. And that's how we know Sarah's there, is that the scorpion goes into where Sarah is. This is Helena. Helena is, it's a manifestation of Helena. And so she's deriding herself, going back to self, something that gives her self gratification. Mm-hmm. At the same time, she's battling with the scorpion, you know, give her nothing. She's lying to you. This, you know, it was an interesting insight into how Helena's mind is working.
Yeah.
Or not working.
No, it's working because she designed a plan to get out of her cell, and it was a very good plan, right? So, her mind is working. It's just working on a different track that you would suspect. Mm-hmm. And it works differently than your brain and my brain and Sarah's brain, but it's working and it's good.
I think Helena deep down really still wants to believe Sarah, even though the majority of her is telling her not to believe her. Yeah. I mean, even when she does that first countdown and Sarah hears her and Sarah's like, what are you counting down for? She didn't have to count down out loud. She didn't have to do these little things. And this was even before, you know, Sarah had, you know, told her that the Castor clones are the brothers, or really tried to get back in with Helena. You know, we'd only had the first part where she was saying, you know, I didn't do that. I, you know, how are you? Oh my gosh, all this. Helena kept giving Sarah these little clues, I think, that helped her, because Sarah clicked in pretty quick about what the countdown was and what they were doing and how to start trying to work as a team. She didn't see that Helena wasn't totally buying into everything, but I still think Helena was giving her those little clues of how not to be a victim, kind of thing.
Well, because like you said, even though the really big part of her didn't believe Sarah, there was still this tiny little part where there were sisters, and Helena should be telling Sarah those things, because she will need them. But, yeah. I really enjoy their dynamic. Even though every time I say it, it feels weird because I know that it's one actress. So she doesn't have a dynamic.
Well,
she has a dynamic with empty air. Or, you know, with a stand-in that's so brilliant.
Yeah, her stand-in acting partner there. With Catherine Alexander, for some reason that's the name that sticks in my head, and I'm so sorry I don't remember your name, because you are fabulous. I'm sure that helps her immensely, because some of these things I don't think you could say believably to a wall or a tennis ball or somebody reading the lines off there, because even though they're separated by a wall, that I really felt her playing off of somebody, and it was interesting. And I kept seeing, like, oh, she's really getting to the point where she trusts Sarah again. Oh, it was just heartbreaking.
It was, because I gotta tell you, till the last possible moment, I hoped against all hope, basically, that Helena would actually, you know, come back. The moment she disappeared around the corner, you know, leaving the room, I thought, hey, maybe she will come back. She will see reason and come back. But there was, you know, I knew that it was pointless because she would be leaving. And then when she stopped at the, I don't know how to call it, because it's not a fence, it's a wall, but it's not a wall.
A perimeter.
Yeah, at the top of the thing, behind the light thingy. When she was arguing with the scorpion, because maybe they should go back for Sarah, and scorpion was doing its very own no escape now before they catch you and all that.
What are you doing? Go, stupid.
My sister, she tears my heart.
Your sister's dead. Think of the baby inside you.
I like where they ended it, because that leaves me with hope that, you know, maybe somehow. I don't believe it will happen, but hey, one can only hope. And hey, maybe Sarah will be able to escape and Helena will help her. Because out of all the sisters, they all have great relationships between each other. But I feel like the relationship between Sarah and Helena is the most rewarding one.
I saw the glimmer of their previous relationship when, you know, Sarah's like, okay, what's the plan? And it's like, oh, you want to be my sandwich? And at first it's like, what? And then she explains what the sandwich is and does that laugh that only Helena can do when she just really tickles herself.
Yeah.
You know? But then after she hears this whole story from Sarah, I mean, we heard this wonderful story, this heartbreaking story from Mrs. S in another part of the episode about her first husband. We hear the story now of Sarah leaving Kira, how it was, you know, a little bit at a time with Mrs. S until finally Mrs. S said, nope, sorry, you can't see her anymore. So we have that whole setup, and you see how that breaks her heart. And what would you do if somebody tried to keep you away from your babies? And that's when Helena is like, okay, I'll help you, Sarah, but you have to help me. And you think, okay, they're back together. They're back on track. Sarah gets beaten up for this. She steals the tweezers for this. They're doing that whole little sequence of events to try and get Helena to break out.
Yeah.
And you're just all so happy, even down to how Helena, it's like assassin clone, is back with the way she treated that one guard.
Yeah.
He's never coming back as a zombie. He is dead as dead. He can't even be a zombie. That went right through the brain.
Yeah.
Everything, it just seemed back. And then, yeah, like you said, when she's like, get the keys, Helena. Now we are even, Sestra. And she left. My hand went over my mouth of like, oh no, this can't be happening. Helena cannot have turned that much. She cannot be this disbelieving. She can't abandon her sestras. It actually had me really worried.
Get the keys. Get the keys. Helena. Helena, get the keys. Get me out. Come on, we have to be quick. Now we are even, Sestra. What? No, no. You leave me here. You've got nobody. Come on. You've got nobody. Come on. Come back.
With the scorpion still berating her. Her berating her own self for stopping and not escaping and not trying to get out. It was a brilliant place to end it. It really was a brilliant place to end that episode.
Mm. And it definitely makes you, you know, look forward to, oh my god, what's going to happen next? Because now everybody is aware of the fact that Helena escaped.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be that much harder to do anything.
Yeah.
And I am so excited. Because, oh my god, Orphan Black knows how to keep me at the edge of my seat.
Yeah. It is definitely, definitely tough. We will see what happens in the next episode, Certain Agony of the Battlefield, which Alex is looking forward to because, woohoo, I don't have to do an Eisenhower quote for that one because it's the same as this one. But I have one little quick snippet about what that episode is about, and it kind of plays back to some things we were talking about. Paul learns the truth about Cody's plans for Castor and has no choice but to make a dangerous play.
Ooh.
I'm thinking Paul might be in the running for backup here pretty soon. It's just my guess.
We'll see.
Just my guess.
We'll see.
Well, that's potential. You have to give it to him. That has the potential for putting him in a backup category.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So speaking of, I think we need to go to our picks for this episode. First off, we have our clone queen.
Three, Cheers for Her Majesty the Queen! Hip hip! Hip hip! Hip hip!
Okay, Alex, I went first last week. Who is your clone queen for this week? I'm guessing that we're breaking the streak because you've had Allison as your clone queen for three episodes running. The episode title of this almost was The One Without Allison. But we weren't sure if she's going to have episodes not in there. As soon as it ended, I went, there's no Allison. Who is Alex going to pick as her clone queen?
I know. I had no idea what to do with myself. And for a second there, I was convinced that the only reason why there wasn't Allison in this episode was that the writers didn't want me to keep my streak. And that was very mean of them, by the way, because I missed Allison. But without Allison in the running, my choice is Helena. Because she, even though I'm heartbroken that she didn't forgive Sarah and that she didn't help Sarah escape, I'm still extremely impressed by the way she planned everything. Because the amount of butter she collected shows you how long ago she came up with this plan.
Mm-hmm.
So she came up with the plan and she executed it. And like last time when it was, you know, Rickon that kind of got stopped because she had to kill Parsons. But she went for it. She was perfect, and I could see the training that she got when she was younger. And everything about her storyline in this episode made me give her the trophy, because, yep, girl, you're the queen.
This was an interesting episode, because we only had three of our Leda clones in it. I love Cosima, but this was not a clone queen-worthy Cosima episode. So it really did bring it down to Sarah or Helena.
Yeah.
And their story was so perfectly intertwined from the beginning to the end that without the other, it just, I don't know. You really needed both of them. So here's how I decided to pick my clone queen. I knew that this week you were going to be going first. So I figured to make it fair, because the story revolved around both of them, whoever you didn't pick, I would. So my clone queen is Sarah. Because okay. I really couldn't decide. Every time I would pick one, the other one, I'd be like, but. I like Sarah opening up in this. I like her being honest. I mean, the how she is really caring for Helena. Mm-hmm. But then also, fine, just rot in jail. I don't care. You don't want to believe me? But then she comes back for more. It's like, no, Helena, come on. We've got to do this together. We've got to be there for each other. The way she opened up about Kira. The way she's trying to defy all of them, the way she's trying to open up these doors and isn't being stupid, like frantic stupid, but she does still believe in Helena.
Mm.
Until, of course, Helena
bisexual, breaks her heart.
You know, just leaves. No, that was just heartbreaking. I think if it wasn't for Sarah, Helena wouldn't come back. If she hadn't come at that time and started talking to her, I think we could potentially have lost Helena for good.
Mm.
Because of Dr. Cody.
Yeah. Evil, evil person.
Evil, evil woman, evil doctor. So I'm going to give it to Sarah, because honestly, I think this episode revolved around Sarah and Helena. And
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. So I will be the light to your dark.
Aww. Okay. Aww, okay.
Which fits perfectly in our relationships and our hearts. Let's move into backup.
I just need you to be my backup, okay?
I don't do backup. I don't
now,
even know what backup is.
Something interesting on backup is I've looked at the last few episodes. We've agreed 3 out of 4 times on backup. And I am wondering if we're going to agree this time or not. So, who was your backup?
My heart goes out to Shay, but she's too new to get backup, and too irrelevant to the main story to get backup, which breaks my heart, but maybe sometime in the future. And so I settled on... Well, it's not settling, because he's awesome, my backup for this episode is Fee. Because, well, he rocked and his eyelashes just distracted me from everything. So yes, plus I liked how he handled everything. It was between him and Mrs. S, because I really liked how they approached the Gracie situation.
Right.
And Art was on screen for too short a period of time to earn the spot in backup. So it was between Fee and Mrs. S, and since it's Fee, you know, I decided, yeah, Fee should get it.
Well, considering last season you said Fee was always going to be your backup.
Yes,
it was about time for
everybody
him to be backup
got the memo.
For you.
You don't have to, you know, make me remind me every time.
I picked, ironically, again, this time I think I picked the dark to your light, because I picked Mrs. S.
Ha! Nice.
She was different in this episode than she's been in just about any other episode she's been in. She's had the softer side, but she's still strong. She's trying to think. She's also trying to comfort. She was vulnerable.
Mm.
And I think that it was a really great episode for Maria Doyle Kennedy.
Definitely.
To have. The way she interacted with Fee, she wasn't the big tough mama. She was more sensitive and more vulnerable.
Mm.
And she let other people help her, which I think then let her be able to help Gracie and other people, you know, eventually. So I think it was a really great episode for her. So I think it's ironic that we're picking the pairs here. It's each one of the two different storylines.
There weren't all that many relevant characters to pick from. So I feel like the complimentary picks that we actually decided on, I think they are the right choices.
And they really show what this episode was about. I mean, these are the two sides.
Yeah.
The backup wasn't really backing up Sarah.
Mm.
The backups were actually backing up each other.
And that's
this
how it should
around.
Be.
And showing that they can have a storyline outside of the Sestos.
Yeah.
So that's very
nice.
Nice. We would love to hear who you would pick as Clone Queen and backup for this episode. Do you agree with Alex, with me, both, neither? Let us know. You can go over to Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. You can also email us, sci-fi for chicks@sci-fi for me.com. And of course, the hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. You should also be subscribing to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice. Sci-Fi for Me, so you don't miss all these other great shows that we talk about. Okay, well, the other great show we talk about, iZombie, because we're only down to the two now.
Yeah.
We would love for you to follow us and share and let everybody else know about us, because, you know, us geek girls need all the help we can get in more ways than one. We will be back next week to talk about Alex, episode 6. Of the 10-episode season of Orphan Black.
We're getting closer to
the end. On the back half. We are halfway through this season, and I cannot believe it, and I do not like it. Episode 6, Certain Agony of the Battlefield. I am looking forward to it, except for the fact it means we're getting that much closer to the end.
I'll see you next week.
Thank you so much, listeners, for joining us. And Alex, thank you, as always.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
This is a fight for knowledge. This is war.
Adios to Najbi.
Those with power do not give it up easily.
They never have.
And they never will.
I am not your weapon.
I am not your toy. I am not your experiment.
I'm not your property.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.